yeah, it'll be fun to see what happens. What happens when Bob Carr and Worcester get? I mean, is it going to be like Jimi Hendrix feedback, or what's going to happen?
Right, and at some point they're going to, at a part where they think we're not taping, they're going to get. He's going to say, "Dave, who is this fucking Bob guy that's doing this to us?" That's the hidden joke that we're laughing at, right?
Yeah. You think maybe there might be someone who's doing that to us? You mean even you? Or
no.
Yeah, except in their own little narcissistic, four-bodied sense.
Yeah, well, like Kiki does it unconsciously. He actually does synchronize at different times, interestingly. He scares the Linux and those guys with his synchronicity, but he's doing it.
Yeah.
He does it.
He,
doing what?
Someone said that you never offered him the ability to live in Maui with him, or were you just joking when you said that?
Yeah, I never offered. Okay, so I say, look, Kiki could have come over here. I offered him a trip. And I know Kiki knows I'm lying, right?
Yeah.
So I lie blatantly right in front of him, and then he has to argue with everybody, Bob's lying! And lately on all Slack, all he writes is, die, Dean, die, 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 trying to kill me. But it's a perfect metaphor when you go back. See, Bowert said that they'll be making paintings and cartoons of me in 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
And events on August 26, 2008 might prove that. Remember that date. You know, we might hear about it in about 10 years. I didn't know how... What?
Which date? Say it again.
August 26. See, my archive, my accountant, Max, Scott, will write it down. August 26, 08. So in the middle of this interesting stuff that's going on the past week and a half, Kiki's going nuts on all flag, trying to kill this shit. But if someone in 100 years, they look back at the guy who actually was right about everything, and they'll say, wow, this guy, I'll study him. They will read this Kiki being acting out the student's rebellion. You know, the student trying to get a past the guru, right?
Yeah.
That's the usefulness of this.
Now, I don't follow the alt slack, and so I don't know really much about Kiki. But Max, you and Kiki were having some kind of a dialogue or some kind of a
constantly almost. You know, we were talking on AIM. For a couple of years.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
so,
and Kiki would post sections of it on Five Body.
Yeah, sometimes entire logs, you know, like 12-hour chats we had.
So, did you consider yourself allies or adversaries?
In the middle, maybe.
Max is a junior Bob. Practicing, studying the effects of me on him, so Max is studying him.
Yeah.
Max is allowing himself to engage with, quote, the enemy and just see what he could get out of it. That was a good technique of suspended judgment.
Yeah, but sometimes at the same time, he might start lobbing shells at me, you know.
Yeah, but you didn't care. It doesn't mean anything. What the fuck? It doesn't affect your life at all.
Yeah.
I wonder if he did complain on Alt Slack that I gave you $100 and he wanted at least something from me, so he demanded $30 so he could join Sang's church. he still sends me private emails going, what quadrant is Iraq in?
Yeah,
what quadrant is it? He keeps saying, I don't never respond to them. And he doesn't understand, well, we're not trying to categorize places. That's not juggling. He does not get the message. But he actually exudes the effects of quadrophenia unconsciously, the way he posts. And he's the only one using my jargon and posting. So he's a total great specimen. And I gave him a break. I said, hey, take a two-year hiatus and do some media college. You take a break. You know, you deserve it. Because his posts, you haven't read them. If you bypass his sociological research, and when he comments on, he's screaming the chart. He's going, you know, Scott, you want me to, we have to do me talking about my quadrant on the chart, which we haven't taped yet. But Kiki does it. He goes, I'm yellow now. I hate green. And then next day I'm red, which is the McLuhan zone, and I hate orange. And then he proves all the orange shit, and he goes on. He's actually acting out to the T as someone inside the Rumpelstiltskin phenomenon there.
Yeah.
But the problem is he seems to believe it.
Not that he has much else to do. I mean, I've been living a pretty comfortable middle-class life. You know, he's on the streets constantly.
Yeah, he's got no money. He hasn't got anything. He's got a nat mother.
Yeah.
who I've talked to on the phone. And, you know, she, did I tell you that, Scott?
Yeah, you've told me about it, but you haven't gone into detail.
Well, the thing was, are you there, Scott?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was talking, the last time I talked to him was about 2-3 years ago. I phoned him. And, you know, I'm thinking it might have been the summer of 2005 when he raped his mother. But he was in, that was in Georgia, if that's the fact.
Yeah.
And that's July 22nd, 2005. But I would say about 2005 when he was in L.A., whenever that was. I called him on the payphone. That's all he had. And I talked to him for a while. Then his mother came on, and she interviewed me for about 20 minutes. And at the end of it, she said, yeah, you're a good guy. I don't mind you influencing my son. And so she, I passed the audition, you know. And she's nuts. And all the time she was trying to interview me, Kiki was screaming in the background, don't listen to her, Bob. She's crazy. She's crazy.
You're crazy or his mom's crazy?
No, he's saying, don't listen to her, Bob.
Oh.
My mom's crazy. And she was ignoring him and acting sort of relatively sane, like a normal mother.
Well, I got the impression that Kiki's attempting to be the anti-Bob.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. He's doing the UG Krishnamurti. He's been trying to do this ever since Five Bodies started.
Yeah, he registered his Hex Body account before you registered your Five Body account.
And he went on to try to nail me. He might have been doing it a bit on Alt Slack. He's always been doing it before Five Body, which was 3 years ago. But he really, you know, really revved it up on Five Body and pissed everybody off. And actually, there's more activity on there now that he's gone.
Yeah.
So he's a perfect part of the play, an important character in the whole thing. And so I would say that Max was Sean, Sean, the respectable kid, and he was Shem, you know, from Fitting His Wake, and the dark kid. And that's what it is. Sean is the guy who does his homework and produces the reports that Mons does. Now Mons is on the edge of awareness of his Sean self and saying, maybe I should be a little Shem. I'm getting numb here, knowing too much. Which is all acted out in Finning's Wake, that dilemma.
Yep.
So what do you think of that, Scott? That's good, eh?
Very good.
Okay, so we should have taped all this, but we can't tape everything. So, I got to get back in touch with Robert Carr to see what he can do, but potentially you could tape them.
Yeah, you know, if it's... I know you have resistance to technology, Bob, but it would be almost trivial for you to get a thing to splice into your telephone and just tape directly to the digital recorder, and then you could upload it to the private folder that I set up for you on the website, and then I could post it to the internet.
Okay, well, the service of me not doing it is it allows you to participate.
Yeah, which I want to be able to do as long as we can work it out technologically and have that happen.
Yeah,
to do the thing to India's, I don't know how we're going to work that with four people, but
yeah, I don't know yet. So I know that Max is a backup. He might be able to do whatever it is. I have to get in touch with Bob Carr tonight, tomorrow, whenever to see what he can do.
Right.
So Scott will go buy the equipment and get the little thing, the plug-in or something.
Right.
And we'll see, and then if nothing happens, we'll do Worcester tomorrow.
Yeah.
We'll continue. I told Worcester the other day on Monday, but he's always around, so we'll do it tomorrow because we got to do GERD on Monday.
I didn't realize Skype was generally limited to two people because I've heard podcasts, you know, professional quality podcasts where they have, you know, a whole slew of people. I thought they were all on Skype.
Okay, so we'll soon find out. So I'll get back to you guys about what Bob Carr can do and how he wants to do it. We don't have to do it tomorrow. Well, we can do Bob Carr in 2 weeks, you know?
Yeah, well, probably it would be better to schedule that for 2 weeks and then in the meantime work out the technology, test it, make sure that the recording works, make sure that we can get everybody all on at the same time and so on.
Yeah, now the one factor is Bob Carter said he wants to talk to Dave Wurster. So I emailed him last night and said, hey, can you hold off a few days till we get it organized so we can tape it?
Yeah.
And he wrote back, he said, okay, I'll wait a few days.
Right.
Now, let's assume he will talk to Dave within two or three days. He might maybe Monday or something because he says he has to do the film work 8, 9, 10. I don't know. But let's say he's going to do it a few days. If that's true and we haven't worked out, Scott, I'll get you to take. He'll call. You have to call you. That's if he can bring you in. If he's got this call conference on his phone, he will call because you got good rates, he said. He will call you and then call Wurster and you'll tape it.
Yeah. And hope that they don't fall into a dead silence.
Well, you try to do me. It'll be your turn to substitute and be Bob. Try to use your fucking mind and memory and think up a thing.
I don't know. That's a lot of pressure, Bob.
All you have to do is remember a few things.
Right.
Actually, ask the questions that you wanted to ask Wurster. You have a bunch of questions that you're going to ask him at some point.
Oh, that's true. But it wouldn't be... The problem was...
You ask him, and then you get two views of it.
Yeah. The problem, you know, why... The reason why, like, for instance, when you're doing Wurster or you're doing GERD, one of the primary reasons why I prefer to remain silent and not participate is that when you have three people, you get these collisions going on all the time. Like right now, you know, Max is being, you know, relatively the silent witness most of the time. He's a bit unassuming. But if we were all trying to get our two cents in at the same time, it's pretty hard to do on the phone.
Well, I'm pretty good at making it happen within three people because I can back off.
Right.
But Mons, there was something I was going to say. So this Wurster stuff that you've heard, if Mons, the only guy in the world, we assume, has heard the whole thing. This LSD history is incredible.
Yeah.
And I talked to Bob Carr about that because Dave says that Bob Carr introduces Dave to people as, here's the guy who got me into LSD. So we have Dave's version of it, and I asked Bob Carr his version of that, and he agreed. That's true. And then he went into the details, but I won't go into that now. It's basically what Dave said. But the LSD came out of Seattle. Nobody knows that. The LSD that spread across America.
Yeah, they just say, institutes all across America were experimenting with it. That's
yes. Yeah. And but no, not the way these guys are doing. I mean, Ralph Doobie was actually setting up acid festivals like Ken Kesey does a couple years later in 62 in San Francisco when they were going to rent the Winter Garden place and set up little clinics, you know. They had that whole gang in Seattle had the inspiration before Leary and Kesey.
Yeah, that's a real contribution to the literature, Bob. I mean, you know, you're getting the real history there.
Yeah.
And
And then I told you, don't know this guy. Here's the amazing thing. This blew James Martinez, you know, into ecstasy. Bob Carr, I found this out in the first phone conversation, still has acid from the 50s. He still has the Sandoz.
Well, what was the story? I thought that Wurster said that it turned into strychnine within a brief period of time.
And I asked, Bob told me that, but and I asked him about the strychnine thing, but...
Who did you ask?
I asked you, you know, because I did hear as well that...
Wurster describes that. Wurster describes that.
Yeah, so could Carr still have any?
Because it's refrigerated or whatever it is that he does, he knows how to keep it going. Because Dave said it would turn into that in a few days, so they would all use it up, right? And then throw a lot of it out.
Yeah.
There must be a way that it doesn't. I mean, it's all sealed up. And it's in his fridge, and here's a... Okay, so I told James, he says, holy shit, that'd be worth flying to India for. Because among the acid community, everybody would love to get that original Sandoz acid.
Right.
And he has it. Now, Bob did say to me later, he said, I don't know what it is anymore. We don't know what it is. It's sitting there, preserved for 50 years.
Yeah, maybe it's turned into D-cell by now.
Yeah, Mons is the only guy who's done research and added to the D-cell history. That's another thing he did. But
I'm surprised there hasn't been chemists in the meantime who haven't been able to actually reproduce it, you know, to the exact molecular blueprint.
Because Wurster said... What?
Joe Nunn Sloan or Hillary
Dory.
We're talking about... I was reading in some of those things, it said... he'd actually sent a sample to this guy at Caltech, who, you know, he put it through, like, an autoclave, that sort of thing.
Yeah, tried to beat the shit out of it, yeah.
Yeah, it's almost kind of like a Baruch-type situation, where, you know, you can't really do it through conventional means, you know, try to find out what it is.
Yeah, it's not substance.
Yeah.
Okay, now Worcester says that it is an alchemical thing. The consciousness of the person making it is the only way it can come forward.
Mm.
So that's a factor. So you can have the formula and you can't get it.
Right.
You have the consciousness.
Yeah.
And Worcester the other night described to me how the S cell happened in detail. We've got to get that on tape. He might have told me that years ago, but he really went in step by step of how Joe and him watched it mutate under the telescope, the microscope, in this new, weird new thing. So we got to get that on tape. But the alchemy. What was the other thing? So the other night I'm talking to Bob Carr. And I'll send you the picture of him and his... it turns out a young man is in his apartment in Bombay, now called Mumbai, which like has 13 million people. It's the second largest city in the world. And the metropolitan area is 19 million, which means you include the suburbs or something. Technically, the city is, I think, 13 million or 19 million, 9 million. So he introduced me to this young guy. Then after I say, is that a lover of yours? He says, yeah. So he has this young, cute 28-year-old as his live-in lover, I guess, or lover. I don't live in, but I think so. Yeah, they are, because I said, did you tell him about what's in your fridge? And the kid hears it. He goes, what's in the fridge? And then Bob mumbles something to him. And then the kid goes, says something else. Wah, 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 wah. And Bob says, it's medicine. And then he says to me, and the kid can hear me, he goes, is that right, Bob? It's medicine, right? I said, yeah, it's medicine. Very good medicine. So the kid never knew about the LSD in the fridge. And he's never, I asked Bob, would this kid know about LSDs? No. They don't know that stuff. They might know about ecstasy, but they don't know the ancient history.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope the kid doesn't cause a problem. Maybe I shouldn't have mentioned it, but
right.
It was funny how it came out, this little thing. You never told me that's in the fridge. What's in the fucking fridge? So that's a neat thing. The guy has something from that. I mean, that would be interesting to analyze.
Yeah, I don't know exactly. I imagine there's some sort of, you know, most pharmaceuticals have a shelf life. You know, the expiration date is always on the bottle.
Now, so I said to him, I said, look, there are a lot of baby boomers in Silicon Valley who have millions of dollars, and they are into the acid world. They would love to try that. I said, you could put up eBay. No, I said, you could put out the word and get $500,000 for it. And he said, yeah, maybe I'll put it up on eBay. And then he says, I'll give you a commission, Bob. So if you know anybody who might be interested in trying this, who wants to give him a lot of money, let me know.
Yeah, and we'll just you'll get the secret council to tend to keep Interpol out of the whole loop,
yes.
Right?
Well, there ain't no Interpol. It's not. We don't have to do anything anymore. We're so impervious now, as shown by August 26,
08. Yeah.
We don't worry about anything.
Well, all the old environments keep going, so you still got to watch your step.
Not me. Not anymore. So that's the good news. What are the benefits of reappearing? But we'll let you guys ponder that.
All right.
Work on that one.
So, Bob, watch out, because Max and I are going to have a private conversation. We're going to deconstruct you completely. we're gonna finally put you away, because we're the only two that have done enough homework to be able to do that.
I'm all for it. Max needs it. Max needs it.
Yeah.
So I had Max.
I'm just 20. I can handle it.
Yeah, as Marshall McLuhan said to Barry Nevitt, I've been with Eric too long. I want you to take over my son. So I'm handing Max over to you, Scott. Okay?
Yep.
All right, so I got to go. Can you hear the blinking? My battery's going blink. Do you guys hear that?
No, I can't. Oh yeah, okay. One more thing. Yeah, August 28th, you said?
Oh, sorry, August 26th. I said,
okay.
I did say 28th in the last time, right?
I was wondering, because 28th was the day I moved in.
August 28th?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, your you've been released on August 26th, so that's why you could be ejected over to Rochester or wherever you are.
Yeah. What are you studying in school, Max?
It's a degree called New Media Publishing.
Oh, cool.
He's doing computers like you, Scott.
Yeah, but but the emphasis is on new media. That's cool.
Yeah.
So you're up on all the latest internet ways of configuring stuff and getting messages out over the net and stuff?
Yeah, yeah. I've already got the two classes that mentioned Marshall McLuhan, but it's I don't know, it's almost kind of like just wasn't what's his name, Levinson or something maybe.
Uh-huh.
They mentioned Levinson.
No, they don't, but if you know Levinson, yeah, it just almost sort of that kind of attitude. You know, they're somnambulistic.
Yeah.
Well, would this degree provide you with to go into marketing or to go actually into internet technology, or what do you plan? What will you do with it?
Yeah, it's one of those vague degrees where you know it could. They tell me it could, you know, easily just net me $50,000 a year or something.
Doing what?
Well, I'll read a few of the classes here. It's New Media Perspectives and Jing for New Media, Digital Foundations, Typography and Page Design, you know, that sort of stuff.
Right.
I also took a lot of those classes in you see, I transferred here, so...
Are you in Rochester now?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
But
can I ask
you... located in a sort of a suburb, Henrietta.
Okay. I want to ask you, are you saying that you think Levinson presents a zombied, somnambulistic version of McLuhan?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're saying that's the level they'll say it in passing in
yeah.
the classes. Yeah. So his metaphor is dead. You know, he's archetype, numb archetype.
Yeah.
On that, in the world of language and culture. That's
yeah,
what
I'm thinking of saying in a, one of these classes, or just like emailing the professor, talking about the, you know, like maybe quoting cliched archetype and seeing how he responds to that.
Right, right. Some stuff he doesn't even know happened.
Yeah.
But you see, the reaction McLuhan got in the 60s is exactly the reaction I get, especially exaggerated on All Slack.
Yeah.
You have to realize the guy was considered a fucking nut.
Yeah.
You know, and now he's an archetype. Well, that'll happen to me. And I must counter the archetype. What?
And as Andrew Crystal said, you know, the perception of T.S. Eliot is almost kind of the same pattern that McLuhan has taken in the 60s, 80s, and 90s.
Yeah, yeah. Have you read all of his thesis?
I've read portions of it, but, you know, since it's over 200 pages, that's just like reading a book.
Yeah, no, it's hard, but it's worth it.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Great quotes.
Okay, so you're saying great quotes?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You mean that he gets from McLuhan?
Yeah,
yeah. And other people. So
Max, does he do a good job of penetrating McLuhan?
Yeah, yeah.
Good.
And of course, you know, since you talked to him, Bobby, he gets into a lot of things. Like he was talking about the monad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, he I guided him through it.
Yeah.
He would call me up and we'd talk for 5 hours and he'd write down notes and then he would mutate it and make it respectable.
Yeah.
And the whole thing, you haven't read it all, but you will see that he's preparing the world for understanding me. That's the punchline. The way it's organized.
When he wrote his doctoral thesis on McLuhan, was it on McLuhan and on you, Bob? Were you?
No. Here's what it is. It's on McLuhan, but he uses Don Thiel to explain the early McLuhan, and his thesis is there's a later McLuhan who Dobbs is the expert on.
And that's explicit in his thesis.
It's explicit that Dobbs is, it's hinted that Dobbs is, but I'm not mentioned that much.
Yeah.
But when you read what he's saying, nobody else said, it's my stuff, you can tell if you know my stuff, that he's repeating me.
Yeah.
So he'll quote a few key sentences from the more extreme sentences from my essay on McLuhan at key points to say, you know, this is what Dobbs says, and this is what I'm trying to get towards.
Right, and you get, and he gives you the, when he...
Yeah, he quotes me the essay and all that, but he does not make a big deal out of me as much as Thiel.
Right.
But the thesis is the early McLuhan and the later McLuhan. The new part of his thesis is to say there's a later McLuhan that nobody knows, and he found the correspondence with people to prop up what I had said that leads to an improved version of the early McLuhan, and the most knowledgeable guy of that was Thiel, but that lays the groundwork for the later McLuhan, which is the real breakthrough of his thesis.
Right. Max, what's your email address?
It's just like my if I bother your username, but at gmail.com.
No, he doesn't know. So what? Monsquaz at gmail.com.
Okay, M-O.
Monsquaz is M-O-N-S-Q-U-A-Z.
Yeah.
Who's it?
M-O-N-S-Q-U-A-Z at
gmail.com.
Gmail.com, okay.
Okay, so that's it. Go to Bob Dean Fest, read the latest, last couple of threads, Mons. Just enjoy what, if you're into it. You'll just find it interesting and Kiggy in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, so I told you what he's complaining about. He wants $30. You got $100. Okay, so that's it. I'm finished.
Yep. Okay.
Okay, talk to you guys later.
Yep, see you, Bob.
Okay, see you back.
Bye.
Bye, Max. Bye, Scott.